Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, in was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said Apfelstrudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen.
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's weekly Nintendo show. I am this week's host, Peer Schneider, but with me are some people that I like much better than myself, including Zach Ryan.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Ryan Altano.
6, 7, 8, 9.
And Casey DeFritas.
10, 11, 12.
Y'all don't know that song?
Why are we singing Sesame Song?
I don't know. I've had it stuck in my head all day. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's great. What is that?
It's a song to teach children how to count to 12.
Oh, good. I got the lyrics right.
Yeah.
And so as we, you know, as Zach hinted at in the last episode, we're switching off hosting duties a little bit because we're very, very busy and we're trying to spread the love around a little bit. We've got a really packed show today, I think. You know, we're going to cover something, something old, something new, something borrowed, and something a little scary too.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, nice rhyme.
Yeah. Like scary, like the president of Nintendo saying that they might not make consoles in the future. We'll get to that in a second. But before that, you wanted to say something, after last week.
So last week we caught a lot of heat from the Fire Emblem community because we misspoke about a number of Fire Emblem related things. And I just wanted to apologize to that community and say, say that there was probably some additional research to have been done. Pear is by far and away the biggest Fire Emblem fan, I think, on our panel. And I think sometimes we forget that we should probably leave those conversations to the experts. And, like, Pear, I just wanted to apologize to you, and I wanted to apologize to the community, because I do feel like I misspoke on a couple of things.
You know, honestly, so. I was zoning out, too. It was our first episode after the holiday break, and we were one man short.
We came in a little hot. So
put this on me.
And, yeah. If you had been here, Brian,
I would have done all the heavy lifting on the Fire Emblem.
But I didn't even realize until I rewatched the clip you said Fire Emblem Three Horses?
Three heroes.
Yeah.
It starts with an H. I apologize. Hopefully it's water under their bridge. And again, apologies to the Fire Emblem community if we upset anybody.
For the record, I played every single game in the Fire Emblem franchise.
Is that true? All of them?
Including the Japan only releases. And I'm not a fan of Heroes.
Do you play Horses?
I played Three Horses too, which is great. Anyway, let's get on with the show. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
You know, let's go into the big news, because, you know, people were talking about whether there would be a Nintendo Direct early on in January, and there was the infamous Nintendo Twitter Direct, where suddenly, you know, the Nintendo Twitter account just kind of tweeted out casually these little news nuggets that would have been really cool in a bigger Direct. Including
news nuggets.
News nuggets, including a game from Capcom coming to the Switch that I don't think any of us ever considered coming to the Switch.
No.
Did you?
No, I didn't. I mean, I thought they came out with Dark Arisen on the PS3.
There were a couple of re-releases. So it's Dragon's Dogma, Dark Arisen, which has dragons in it, which means you played it.
Well, I did. I played it when it first came out in, 2012?
Yep.
And it's an open action RPG, so it's more Western-oriented than Japanese, even though it's from a Japanese company.
Yep.
It's a lot more like Oblivion than you would say, like, I don't know, Dragon Quest or something like that.
Okay. So is it Capcom's Monster Hunter? Is that fair to say? Or more
Elder
Scrolls-y?
Capcom is Monster Hunter. People say this is a...
Sorry, Monster Hunter community.
Tune in next week for that retraction.
Oh, no. It has some D&D vibes. I don't know. I didn't play that much. I played about 10 hours and I never finished it. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited for it to come to Switch, because now I will finish it. And I know Dark Arisen has some changes in it that Capcom implemented after getting community feedback from the original game. And it has additional content, like another dungeon.
Like voice acting. I mean, in 2013 for the re-release, they added a ton of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And basically, so you can choose a class, basically, in the beginning. I think it's a Strider, Fighter, and Mage. And then as you progress in the game, you can branch out to other classes. Like if you pick Strider, you can become a magic archer, which is a combination between mage and strider. And you can also become a ranger, which focuses on like bow attacks. So you can have a lot of customization there on your character. And they also have this cool pawn system, which was very interesting at the time. I never really saw a game that did that. But every person in the game makes their own pawn, which is your NPC friend.
Are you saying pawn, like a chess pawn?
Yeah, because it actually makes a lot of sense, because
Florida,
the story... am I pronouncing it weird?
I heard
he's used to German accents.
For some reason I heard pond, and I was like, everyone's out there just landscaping? That's kind of nice, but...
No, so a pawn is basically a shell of a person who's complete...
Same.
I'm like myself.
Whose complete purpose is to follow that dimension and world's arisen the quest... Whatever that quest in Dragon's Dogma is. I'm sorry, I can't remember. I think it's to kill the dragon, but I'm not entirely sure. I know there's some twists that happen in the game. So
that's where the character creator comes in. It has this really elaborate character creator. If you look up some YouTube videos, there's some truly
really funny,
frightening creations that people share with the world out there.
Well, you shared with us King of the Hill.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, people made all sorts of... Like, it's a little bit... A little bit like with a Mii creator, right? Like, people try to make approximations of famous people and characters, and there's just a ton of those. But I mean, first of all, the team behind Dragon's Dogma, they were pretty renowned designers, right? Worked on Devil May Cry, Power Stone, and Breath of Fire, which when I when I played my Super Famicom, I loved Breath of Fire back in the day in the RPG series. I think almost forgotten, right?
That's some pretty serious RPG pedigree. Yeah. Breath of Fire is sort of one of those underlooked RPG series. Breath of Fire 2 is one of my favorite RPGs of all time.
That's dragons, too.
Yeah, it does. It also has a lot of big monster fighting. Yep. So if you're a fan of The Witcher or Skyrim or any of those kind of games, you will like this game. And the combat is especially interesting because you can actually climb onto the monsters and deal damage to them.
Cool.
Are you going to play this, Brian?
Reminded me of Shadow of the Colossus.
Possibly, but I think the bigger story for me personally is that this is showing that Capcom as a developer is not afraid to dig into their weird archives and put stuff on Switch. And we already know about the Resident Evil ports coming this year. Yeah. Those are obviously big wins, no-brainers. But Capcom has a deep history of stuff that from last gen and the gen before that you probably don't necessarily assume would make sense on Switch.
What about Dark Void on Switch?
Yeah. Bring that back.
But at first, I skipped Dragon's Dogma when it came out, but there were a lot of positive voices in the office. I think we gave the game a 7.9, so, you know, high end of good, almost great. I ignored it at the time. I was busy with something. I don't remember where it was in 2012. But I was thinking about playing it. There was a re-release on the current gen consoles in 2017, and I was thinking about playing it and skipped it, and now I'm happy.
Friend of the show.
To play on the go.
Friend of the show, Alana Pierce, former IGN. This is one of her all-time favorite games. Yep. She spent many, many times, many conversations trying to convince me to go back and play it, especially when they did the HD re-release. This is an awesome opportunity. I've always kind of assumed that it had more of like a Dark Souls vibe to it, but is that not really the case?
So it has that real-time action type combat, but it was actually made for people who aren't that good at action RPGs mind. It was made with those people in mind so they would be able to pick it up and play it and do it well.
Nice.
And I think some of the classes, depending on the class, will help you, like if you're not that great. I can't remember exactly what it is, so I'm not going to spread misinformation, but I think one of the classes has it so if you get knocked down, you get a second chance, so you'll like come back with some HP. Mm. Or it allows you to get back into combat quicker. I don't know. I didn't use that class. So
Plus, it's got all those cool pawns.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that was just you make your NPC character, and then you can actually go on the board and recruit other players' pawns into your party.
Okay.
But, like, say I made a pawn, you can go online and then recruit my pawn into your party.
Great.
And then send them back to me, and I would get stuff. You could send them.
Game.
Yeah, you could send them with, like, a gift or something.
Okay, nice. That's kind of cool.
Awesome. That wasn't the only announcement. And again, Dragon's Dogma. I don't think anybody could have predicted this.
No.
Does this mean we're going to get a Dragon's Dogma 2?
Oh, well,
probably not. Probably has no correlation.
I think what it means is as long as these games keep on selling, the publishers will dig into the last gen and maybe the last gen for some of these overlooked games. And like, I think a lot of Nintendo fans ignored these games when they first came out.
They did.
And so it's new games to them, including me. So it's great. But Nintendo also showed a new trailer for Yoshi's Crafted World. Mm-hmm. And they finally gave us a firm release date, which is March 29th.
Cool.
What do you guys think of the footage? You watch it?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. You can preload the game right now, which is really cool. It's got a firm release date, which means we finally know we're going to be playing this sooner than I think I thought.
I thought it was going to be like another one of those Nintendo E3 games. Like,
yeah.
I thought it was going to come out like right before E3.
Yep.
The only thing that because they announced this around the same time as Kirby, which we'll get to in a second, but this probably means that Animal Crossing isn't their big spring game, which sucks. Yeah. But
did you think that it was going to be their big spring game?
Yeah, I did.
I thought that was fall.
Maybe they'll focus on Animal Crossing at E3 and make their big display all about Animal Crossing.
Oh, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. If I could chop down a tree at E3.
What do you guys think about everything being furry?
I love it.
Fuzzy, you mean?
It's so cute.
It's furry. And felt?
Felty?
Furry is a very different thing.
Okay. They're very fuzzy looking.
I mean, that's the thing for these games like Yoshi and, what's this guy's name? Kirby. They each get their own sort of visual style for each game, right? Like, we've seen all this stuff. So like, I like this sort of fuzzy approach. I wonder if we touch it, we'll get dizzy.
I hope so.
Oh my God.
I do.
Let's hope not. Nintendo also gave us a release date for Kirby's Extra Epic Yarn. If you guys remember, that was announced in September of last year, that we'd be getting a Wii port on the 3DS. I'm curious to see if we'll see them dig more into the Wii library now for 3DS games and then GameCube and Wii U library for Switch, you know?
Maybe so. I mean, we saw Yoshi's Woolly World come to 3DS last year in a really good port. I like this idea of the same way that they're putting their back catalog onto Switch in some regard. I like the idea of them taking some of these games and putting them on 3DS as well.
So. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was what Luigi's Mansion for GameCube, which was a GameCube launch game, came in the 3DS just a few months ago. It's weird.
It's a mix, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's millions of them out there. 3DS is not Luigi's Mansion. So well, that too. But
There's only three.
Yeah. It's cool to see the sort of the swan songs of this system are games that were kind of some of the bigger products in their heydays of the GameCube and the Wii and stuff like that. Maybe that means that towards the end of the Switch's life cycle, we'll start to see ports like this, but hopefully sooner than later.
But ladies and gentlemen, I think it's important to always remember when you see one of these games come to 3DS or Switch, the fact that if you go back 10 years in time, we wouldn't have thought that we'd be playing these games in a portable. You know, there were all indicators that portable gaming was going to go into a different direction. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly mobile gaming, you wouldn't imagine playing these intricate platformers without a stick and all that. It's really cool that we're seeing these games on handheld and hybrid handhelds nowadays.
I think it's always sort of surprised me just at how powerful the 3DS is. Mm-hmm. You know, when Super Mario 64 first came out for the original DS, it kind of blew my hair back that you could play Super Mario on the go. And that's a similar feeling to a lot of the games that we get on Switch. But what are you laughing about?
I was looking at because I was about to say same, and I haven't grown it back since. Something similar.
Yeah.
I was waiting for throw my hair back joke.
But Yoshi's Woolly World is a great port, and it plays super fluidly, and that's an even newer game on a less powerful console.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think
the ports are very impressive the way that they
and play. They ditched the 3D element, right, for a lot of these games, and that allows them to open up to a lot more processing power. Although, Perry, you have a theory about when the Kirby's arrive.
Yeah, well, usually when a Kirby game gets released or multiple, it means it's the end of the system.
Okay, so we can finally.
I feel like we've been getting a lot of Kirby games on 3DS,
though. That's true.
Unfortunately, Nintendo heard about that theory and just vetoed it. And they're only going to make Kirby games.
You think they're doing it just to spite you?
Just to spite us, yeah, for sure.
Schneider! Yeah.
And they put out a Kirby game in the first year of Switch, and that's still living.
So. I think they were seeing whether it could weather the curse, and then it would be a success. so we had something bored, we had something old, we had something new. No, now we're getting to something really old, and that's Nintendo announced the next batch of games for Nintendo Online for January. So these games will be available on the 16th of this month, and if you live in the United States and the Western Hemisphere, you'll be getting Zelda 2, The Legend of Zelda 2, and Blaster Master. Zelda 2 from 1987, Blaster Master from 1988, and then it's a weird number because usually we get three games, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you live in Japan or you're smart, you're also getting a game over there called Joy Mech Fight. That Joy Mech Fight never came out in the U.S. That was a very late Famicom game released in 1993. So the system was already 10 years old, which is why we didn't get it.
So why don't they take that opportunity to give it to us now?
Right.
Well, I don't know, but you can take that opportunity and download the Famicom game app just access them from there. I looked up gameplay videos for this game because I've never played it before. This is definitely something that I didn't even think existed.
I think it's like Jared Petty loves this game.
Yeah, it's shocking. Yeah. It's a sort of disjointed Rayman / Vector Man fighting game where the characters are robots but they don't have limbs.
Yep.
And it's like it's really blurry and floaty looking. The art direction behind like the menus and the story cutscenes are really cool, but the actual gameplay itself, it's like it's an NES fighting game.
It is honestly. I mean, it's worth playing. And again, I think it was Jared who lent me the cartridge. It is worth playing. Greetings.
Well there.
Because it is almost a precursor to Smash Brothers. This is Nintendo trying a fighting game, you know, obviously not with with kind of like Street Fighter sprites, but by having almost these kind of like bubbly robots. And Sukapon, the main robot character, if you play Smash Brothers Ultimate, he's actually an assist and he's in there as a spirit. So they haven't forgotten about this title. But yeah, this is not a game that requires you to read a lot of English. There's a fan translation, obviously, in the ROM world. It has Japanese names for the characters. But they should have just put this out over here.
Yeah, especially in lieu of the fact that, A, we didn't know what we were going to get for January on NES Online until yesterday. No. Mm-hmm. And B, there's only two games. And like we've said before, at this rate, it's going to take them like what, 40 years to get every game out from the NES library on a Switch. That said, Zelda 2, I adore that game. I totally understand why people hate that game. I think it's awesome. It's hard as hell.
People hate that game because their producer Dan loves it, but people hate it because it's different from the first one.
Well, it's so difficult,
and it's kind of like a side story in that after it, we went back to the overworld and top down view of the first game, and not a focus on jumping. Yeah. Right?
I will say, if you're playing that game for the first time, play it like an RPG for the first few hours. Grind a lot, level up a lot, and then use save states if you have to. Just get through it because it's really fun. The puzzle design and combat and levels are really great.
The music's really awesome. Good.
Fun fact: only Zelda that I've never finished. Zelda 2.
Now's your chance.
So we know why. It's because I'm a big wuss.
It is.
No, I think you could do it.
The other note that I wanted to say about Blaster Master has one of my favorite soundtracks of all time.
It's awesome.
The music in Blaster Master is so dope.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's great.
That's actually another like very hard classic NES game that I never finished.
Yeah.
I never played it. I never played the NES
version. Wow. Really?
Yeah, only the
release. It'll be fun for folks that played the new Blaster Master at Switch's launch to go back and see the roots on this. I think that's kind of cool.
It's totally the same DNA.
I didn't even know this existed. I have no idea what that is.
Blaster Master. It's a story about a boy.
A robot that drives a tank.
It's a boy that gets a pet frog that falls into a hole in his backyard that accidentally is this, like, a subterranean galaxial portal to hell.
Are you sure this isn't some weird story to some creepypasta comic or something?
Sure,
online?
That too. Could be. Yeah, could be.
I was
an adventure. But the cool thing about this game is it mixes sort of side-scrolling vehicular combat with top-down shooting and exploration. So it's really weird. If you're interested, Zach just mentioned it, but when the Switch launched, Blaster Master Zero, I think it was called?
Blaster Master Remaster Mastered.
Remaster Master Zero Mission Master Raster. Launched on Switch, and it's awesome, and it's got like Shovel Knight and a bunch of other weird stuff.
Yeah, you can play it, yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I was a guest on the Nintendo Power Podcast in December, and Chris Slate, I am right now, and Chris Slate, who hosts that show, he does this quiz, like you have to guess a game that was released 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and so forth, and Blaster Master is one of the few games that I didn't play, and of course that was the NES game.
Oh.
But I actually said Master Blaster.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't give me the point for it.
Aww.
I said Master Blaster, and then I moved on. You should have given me the point, man. Which is of course a character in the Mad Max
universe.
I
think that's what we used to call
it—a tiny man sitting on a big man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That should be a game too. Just a quick note on some of the games that are out this week. There are about 954,000 new indie games out on the Nintendo Switch, and Brian was on vacation, so I couldn't play them all for you this time, but I'm sure we'll hear all about it next week. Mm-hmm. But Mario & Luigi Bowser's Inside Story plus Bowser Jr.'s Journey is coming out this week on the 3DS, so that's a port of the DS game.
Do you think that's the longest title in games history?
No.
Mario and Luigi, Bowser's Inside Story, plus Bowser Jr.'s Journey.
So I know there.
That is a long title.
There's some Japanese game titles where I remember when we were entering them into our database, the field wasn't long enough.
Right. This might be the longest Nintendo first party
Maybe,
title.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's up there.
But so that's coming out. It's a good game if you haven't played that yet. It's nice that you get another chance at it. It feels fairly recent. Like I was surprised to learn it was from 2009.
I was going
to
say, can you believe that game is 10 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then also, Tales of Vesperia Definitive Edition is out for the Switch. You played that game?
I did not play that game. I played Tales on the 360. I don't remember which one it was.
Okay.
But I remember there was co-op, which is the reason why I picked it up, because I was looking for something to play.
So,
but it's
a pretty game.
It's an action RPG, and you go around the world. I don't know. I haven't played it, but yeah.
Just stop then.
No, yeah, I'll stop. Yeah. But I do know that the battle is in real time, and how co-op works is that when you go into battle, someone else can control one of your party members. So when you're not in battle, it's a single player game, but when you go into battle, you can play with another person.
So we'll see. Maybe next week. Next week we definitely have some people who love this franchise.
Yeah.
Maybe we can have a guest on to talk about this one.
Yeah.
But
I do know it's the 10th anniversary of the 2008 release.
Okay.
Ish. I don't know. That's what it said it was supposed to be celebrating. But
we're definitely getting prettier graphics. I'm loving. Every RPG that releases on the Switch makes me happy because I know it'll be a success in Japan, and the system's really taken off over there. It's really, really good to see that.
Yeah, it's cool.
Renewed interest in Nintendo over there in Japan.
Yeah, this is another game that I want to play.
So, you know, these are some of the smaller games. You know, you notice a lot of re-releases. Well, there's a bigger re-release as well, this week, and that's New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe, which is, you know, we talked a little bit about it, last week. Mm-hmm. And you were worried to share your impressions because you thought we were under embargo. We were not. Mm-hmm. So you can actually talk about it. And by the way, we've played this game a long time ago.
Yeah, 6 years ago.
Yeah, we played this game for a very long time ago, but now we're playing it again.
Yeah, and it's, you know, if you've never played it on the Wii U, it's definitely worth picking up. There was a little bit of negativity around this title when it first came out because with the Wii U, everybody was expecting greatness from, Mario's creators and something more akin to, you know, Galaxy 2 or, yep. or a major 3D game. And so this wasn't, at the time, it wasn't what people wanted. But then you started to play it and you really realized the genius of pulling this game off with a four-player mode. And then just, you know, it's just filled with really cool puzzles. The difficulty ramps up. It starts a little slow.
Yeah, I think that negativity was sort of also echoed by the fact that this was, at the time, I believe, the third or fourth New Super Mario Bros. Mm-hmm. game in this art style.
Yeah, and they were really cranking them out at the time.
Yeah, and there was definitely some fatigue with that. That said, I genuinely believe this is the best one. It's the best looking
of the
new Super Mario Brothers games, not of the Mario Brothers games. But I think this is a fantastic co-op game. If you missed it, which you probably did, or maybe you didn't. If you're listening to the show, you're a hardcore Nintendo fan. But if you missed it on Wii U, this is one of the best like co-op, sort of same screen action platforming games you can play. It's completely chaotic when you play with people who are good and positive. It's a wonderful, charming experience. When you play with psychopaths who pick you up and throw you into the hole all the time and kill you, it's equally fun for different reasons, and you'll be screaming at each other. They added some new stuff around, like this crown that only works with one character. And so the weird thing about this now is when you play as Toadette, she effectively acts as easy mode, and Nabbit is very easy mode. So some of the stuff I didn't get to try out but I read about is that you're kind of forced into using those characters when you play as four player. So you won't notice that stuff if you play in co-op or maybe even two or three players. But with four players, it gets it sort of pushes one of you into automatically being one of those characters. Mm-hmm. Secondly, that crown that you saw, that power-up that turns you into Peachette, only works with Toadette.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of odd. Also, this game ditches one of the modes that was on the Wii U, which is that touchscreen mode. I don't know if you remember. It let you draw blocks to sort of assist other players, but you could also troll them.
Mess them up.
Yeah. So that's gone here, probably for technical reasons. That said, there's dozens of really awesome levels here. It's just super fun. This is a no-brainer on Switch. I really love this game.
I agree with you that of the new Super Mario Brothers games, to me, this is probably number two, only behind the original new Super Mario Brothers. I think I like that one a little bit more. And that very well could be just because that was like the first return to like
the DS one?
Yeah, the first DS game. I've been playing this game, and it has sort of reminded me that I kind of dislike the new Super Mario Brothers series. I love Mario games and I love a 2D platformer, and this is both of those. But as a Mario game, the new Super Mario franchise has never particularly been my favorite. I think I said this last week, but like, I'm not a super big fan of the art style. Mm-hmm. And the thing about playing these games is like, I've been playing as Toadette, which is easy mode, but it also, because she feels closer to the physics of the original Mario games, I feel like Mario and Luigi in these games has always felt a little bit floaty. Yeah. The physics are a little bit floatier. The addition of like the double jumps and the twist jumps and things like that complicate the game for me in a way that like in Super Mario World, you ran and you jumped and you glided. And that's it. Mm-hmm. And in this game, you have so many different move sets to your available to you that one of the things that is interesting about this game in particular is that, yes, Toadette is easy mode, but Peachette is super easy mode in that you can access places as Peachette and get secrets and things that you can only get as Mario or Luigi with different costumes or like by making these like insane jumps.
Because she
like
gets a double jump, right?
She gets a double jump, and you can also do a thing.
Float.
You can float, but you can also do a thing that is available to Mario and Luigi and Toad with the squirrel costume in that there's a last ditch effort where if you flick the controller, you'll shoot back up. Like that one. And Peachette can do that all the time. So she doesn't need a special power-up to do that. So there are areas that you can reach so much easier as Peachette. So I've been playing through as Toadette because it makes a 100% run much easier. Like, finding those golden coins are much more simple when you've got those characters. But ultimately, like, this game to me is great, but I'll never love the Super Mario, new Super Mario franchise the way that I love, like, the 3D Mario games or the original Mario Brothers.
Sure.
So again, like, I feel like it lacks a little, like, personality wise, it's a little lacking. And it's a game that was, kind of going up against Rayman Legends.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Rayman had, like, all this humor and crazy characters and, like, really beautiful hand-drawn art and
rhythm sections.
I firmly believe the 4-player is not as successful in Rayman compared to this, but it just had so much more charm, and this felt a little staid at the time. I do like, though, that with the crown, you now have, for one player, you have a power-up that can't be gobbled up by the other players, right. which kind of changes the dynamic a little bit, because sometimes people accidentally take, like, 3 mushrooms in a row, and everybody's like, hey, come on, you know?
But
this can't happen with this one.
The annoying thing about the Peachette crown – sorry, Brian, I don't mean to cut off, but the one thing that bothers me – and maybe there's a way around this that I just haven't discovered yet, but if you're playing through the game as – Mario or Luigi, you can switch characters at any time, but you'll get Peachette crowns in levels when you're playing as other characters, and that eats up one of the spaces in your inventory, which is like, well, this is great that I have this, but now I either absolutely have to switch a character or just forfeit this space that I could have put an acorn or a mushroom or a fire flower or something like that.
And you can't throw them away.
One of the things I was thinking
I'm not sure. I just haven't discovered it yet.
Oh, right. Yeah. One of the things I was thinking about that seems like a huge miss here is that between the launch of this game and the relaunch of this game now, we got Mario Maker, which is a game that allowed you to switch between multiple art styles.
Yeah.
And that would have been really cool to have implemented here, to play this entire game with Super Mario World graphics or Super Mario 1 graphics. I think that would alleviate the fatigue we have on this, like, admittedly not great art style. It wouldn't do really anything for the music, I don't think, but because the music's
I didn't think about that. That's a great idea. You would have to redesign a lot of things because the blocks and obviously the kind of diagonal lines didn't exist in those art styles. But
weirdly, this game has a lot more in tune, I would say, like, DNA-wise with the original Mario Brothers than it does something like 3 or World in terms of actually, like, the way the core levels unfold. Because you don't get a cape. You can't just go fly off into everything else. It feels a little more grounded in that way.
Because of the 4-player, yeah.
Yeah, it's built around the multiplayer element, and so you can't have somebody just sort of disappear off screen. But like I said, I think a lot of people miss this. We gave it, I believe, an 8. And I think it's a really good game. So
I think an 8 is right on the money, too.
Totally.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you guys, since we've gotten this re-release of New Super Mario Brothers from the Wii U, it is obvious Nintendo is interested in keeping the Mario story alive while they're cranking away on the next sequel to Odyssey or whatever it should be. Where do you think
Super Mario Origins?
Yeah, Origins. There you go. We don't have enough Origins games. You're right. I did like Assassin's Creed Origins very much. Thank you. What game do you think they should go back to next? Like, what past game would you love to see ported to the Switch out of the core Mario franchise? And maybe we'll start with Brian on this one.
Super Mario 64.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're going back to, like, the most influential one.
Yeah, I honestly still think it's the best 3D Mario.
Okay.
I do. Like, it's just, I think it balances the collect-a-thon and this sort of discovery and boss fights and cool varied worlds. I like the painting mechanic of jumping in and, like, just being able to access a different star, and the parameters of the world changes depending on which one you chose. This is a game, you know, Zach, it blew your hair back on the DS. That was so long ago.
Yeah.
And we've never really had a modernized version of that game.
Well, that's the DS version is not a very good version either.
It's like, it misses a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, the analog stick wasn't there.
Controls
were
a huge problem. Yeah. I mean, that was originally a game built around one of the best controller innovations of all time, and then ported to a system that didn't have that. So, and they added new stars and Wario, so that's cool. But we've seen this game ported to Wii and Wii U in terms of Virtual Console, but there's no version of it you can play on a modern Nintendo console.
So you want?
I'd want a whole remake.
I would too.
Complete remake. So, yeah. Okay.
If they, what if they did like Mario 64 in the Super Mario Odyssey engine?
Oh, man. Yeah, or like you know, cool. Get what with Grezzo, who did Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. Get them to port this game. I'm sure they're busy on something right now, but like something along those lines. It's sort of like, hey, we took this old game and it's an old N64 game, and now it looks modern. And here you go. It's on Switch.
It's surprisingly, when you go back and play it now, it is surprisingly. It just holds up.
It does.
Control wise, even the camera for the most part, you know, the way you discover things in the world works really well. I would say the bosses are a little lame.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just throw them off the mountain or whatever. It's except for the Bowser battle, which was really iconic, obviously.
Dude,
for
spoilers
too. Yeah, I'd love to see that game as well. What about you? What's your pick for Mario game?
I know. It was between Super Mario Sunshine and Super Mario 3D World.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll talk about Sunshine, so I'll just talk about 3D World. That was a Wii U game, and I feel like just like New Super Mario Bros. U, a lot of people didn't play it because it was on the Wii U. Mm-hmm. I mean, the last time I checked, the Wii U sold about like 13.5 million units.
Mm-hmm.
The Switch has already surpassed that. So
by definition, there are some people
that haven't played it yet. Yeah. So I think that would be a really easy, good choice. And I know a lot of people really liked it a lot.
I love that game.
Yeah. And it was also a game that I didn't get to play a lot of. I played it at a friend's house for a few hours and then I never got to play it again.
Yeah. I think 3D Land and 3D World are so much better 2D Mario games than the new Super Mario Brothers franchise. Mm-hmm. I prefer those two games over any of the new Super Mario Brothers games. Like, I'm right there with you.
All the positive things I just said about new Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe Switch 2.
Good.
6 golden coins. I would apply to 3D World tenfold. That is an infinitely better co-op game. 3D Land is really fun, but the co-op stuff in 3D World and the cat power-ups are so good. Going through those levels and trying to 100% them and find all the extra coins and stuff, that's where Get the Thing originated from, by the way.
There we go.
Give us that origin story.
Okay. I honestly don't even think it's a matter of if but when we see that on Switch. And I don't think it'll be this year, but I think it'll be next year for sure. I think they'll let a couple of ports this year cook, and then 3D World will kick off next year in the
same
way.
That'd be cool.
Zachary, what do you think should come over?
The unpopular opinion, I like Super Mario Galaxy 2 better than I like the original Super Mario Galaxy.
Is that an unpopular opinion?
Why?
No,
I don't know. I feel like most people that I talk to say that the original Galaxy is their favorite, but
because it's fresher, right? Like when you play it for the first time. But I thought 2 was a better tweak game.
Yeah, I love Yoshi. I think that there's just like, because it's a variation on a theme and because they have all these sort of like B-sides for Galaxy 2, I think that there's a lot more innovation in Galaxy 2. Not that Galaxy isn't like mind-blowing in the way that it does a lot of things, but this game takes those things that are already awesome and improves upon them and multiplies them not infinitely, but by quite a bit. So I'd love to see, I think we're sort of at a deficit of Super Mario Galaxy in general, so honestly, either of those games coming to Switch would be great, but if I had to choose one, I would pick Galaxy 2.
I'll say that the level design in this game is, I would say, much more inventive than the first one, and also that it gets much harder.
Yeah.
Like the way the difficulty scales towards the end of this game, this was, I think, one of the first Mario games where they were like, hey, we're going to just go crazy at the finish line. Mm. And if you're there for it and you want 100% this game, you will get a very difficult game.
Yep.
What sucks about this game is that there's a couple of motion control based things that are just that I would like to see them gut entirely.
Yeah,
like the weird like waggle stuff.
There's
a couple mini games you have to like
jumping
balance.
Into the. That's right. Yeah. I mean, they could still do that.
Spinning the Wiimote to jump through a star. I think that was cool. That always felt satisfying.
But how about just pressing the jump button?
I agree.
You know, I was playing some more Grease, and in that one, you just press the jump button again whenever you touch. The little sparkly butterflies, and it's the exact same mechanic as in these games. Speaking of difficult games, the one I would love to see back, you already clairvoyantly hinted at it, is Super Mario Sunshine, which came out in 2002.
Often maligned, but a much better game than you remember.
It is the one game with the roughest levels in any Mario game.
Well,
the beach level where the weird manta rays paint stuff, like it chugs. Like you can get it to drop to 5 frames per second. And then the pachinko machine, the camera can get stuck and you die because you can't see. Like it felt like they had to put this out and they didn't tweak it as much as some of the other games. And I feel like it's time to fix that.
It's
upgrade it visually and give us that game back.
It's been a long time since, I've done any reading on Super Mario Sunshine, but I believe that the whole thing about it was that it was basically an unfinished game. They had to put it out because the GameCube needed a Mario game.
But it also needed to be out in the summer because they made this whole like beach theme and they were talking about it being a summer game.
They were up against a very hard deadline, and there are parts of this game that you can see that they're just not complete. Like you're saying, that there's not a lot of QA that needed to happen, and there's also things that like obvious chunks of the game are missing, especially later in the game. I would love to see them do like a legitimate, not just a remaster, but go back in and fix a lot of those things and put the missing pieces back into this game and make it the masterpiece that it really could be. Because like I think this game is great. If I was a reviewer at the time giving it like a review, I'd probably do like an 8.5. Mm-hmm. But this could have been a 9 or a 10.
To be honest, when I was a kid, I didn't notice that it was unfinished.
Yeah,
I didn't notice the things that you guys are bringing up now.
I didn't until I 100%ed it. There's like this purple coin chase. Dude,
the purple coin chase is brutal.
Yeah, and I think the reward for it is just like one of the characters in the game laughing at you.
Yeah.
Like it's not great. But the flood mechanic in this game is phenomenal.
It feels so good. Like the jetpack feels really good.
And this is the only mainline Mario game that we have never seen
anywhere else yet.
Ported in any capacity, which is insane to me.
Yeah,
like,
and
it never even made it to a virtual console or anything like that.
So we've seen a lot of these puzzles repeated in Zelda games, for example, right? Like there's a lot of kind of physics-based, like spray water at a windmill to speed it up. We've seen some of that recycled in the past. And so if this is somebody's first Mario game, it probably doesn't feel as fresh as what it felt like to us back then. But like, this was the one game that dared to give you these new powers that were almost making things a little too easy in some cases. Like it is easier to land on a platform in this game because you can save yourself with the backpack, right?
Yeah.
But then they take it away.
Yeah, I was going to say the levels in which they take the flood away, like you can feel playing those levels now. You can feel like the DNA of Super Mario Odyssey
and
in
Galaxy,
those levels and Galaxy. Yeah. Just in the way that it's like super difficult platforming in a 3D space. Like even more so in Odyssey than in Galaxy, I feel like you feel these flood levels, floodless levels, I guess. But yeah.
And there's so many nods to this game in Smash Brothers, which we've all been playing recently. So I think it'd be really cool to bring that back out and go like, hey, remember this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we just mentioned, you know, easily 4 games we would like to return in portable form on the Switch. Hopefully that happens. I mean, I want a brand new Mario game more than anything else, but any of these, please, anytime.
I have a touchy question.
Okay.
Do you guys think they deserve to be full price, considering their ports?
Well, I don't think you have a choice, because that's one of the issues with our little re-release here.
So there's a lot of controversy right now around New Super Mario Bros. Deluxe U version 2.3, because it's a $60 game.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also however many years old, right? What, 6 years old?
6 years
old. I do think that given the added bonus that you have all the Luigi levels.
Yeah, which we forgot to mention. That was effectively its own retail package.
We talked about that last week. It's 146 levels or 126 levels. I forget the total number, but you do have more levels. You do have extra characters. Still not enough to justify a full price tag to me. I think that if you want to put out Super Mario Sunshine, if you want to put out Super Mario Galaxy, make them digital only and give it to us for $20.
Remaster them and sell them for $30 like they did on 3DS.
Yeah.
The number one justification I have seen for New Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe Remix Remastered 2 being $60 is that it's going to sell well anyway, which is not a good reason to sell something for $60. Just because it's going to sell well doesn't mean it needs to be that price, you know?
I guess
if
they
it's
did
going
add
to sell well,
the new character, but I don't think that justifies.
Aren't you going to make it up on the back end anyway? So
I think you'll have a hard time finding anybody who thinks this practice is great, or thinks that it's justified. You know, these are gap fillers that are games that you can buy elsewhere for cheaper, and you probably still have a Wii U or Wii in the house.
I mean,
so I would love to see these.
They're probably loving it
for sure
down at GameStop, right? Or when the MPD numbers come in,
for sure.
Because this is going to be up there again. But
it's totally worth it if you've never played the game. Like, I still...
No,
but,
no, they, yeah. they're great games.
Super Mario 64 is not worth $60.
No, no, not 64. I'm talking about a new Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah. And, well, okay, maybe that was the wrong example. Sunshine is not worth $60 if you've never played it before. I'm
like,
sorry, you have to move on.
A fully remastered Super Mario 64, would you spend $60 on it?
If they rebuilt it in the Odyssey engine, I would give them $100 because Super Mario 64 is a brilliant, amazing game.
Stupid question. We're part of the problem.
I know.
But guys, it might not matter at all because maybe Nintendo will not make any consoles in the future, so you don't have to worry about this.
I hate this story.
Well, you know, it's one of those stories. So let's tell people first what happened, right? So Nintendo's new president, Mr. Shuntaro Furukawa, met with Nikkei, a storied Japanese trade outlet, that the company and talked about a whole bunch of things, right? Like their company performance, what they would like to see, what they would like to do in the future. And he dropped a couple of nuggets, and I'm sure it must have made the PR people at Nintendo in Japan just fall over and want to go on vacation permanently. But he commented on the ups and downs of the business, and as we all know, they did really well with the Wii and not so well with the Wii U. And he said that he would like to reduce this instability and this fluctuation by, you know, focusing on Nintendo smartphone game development. Now, hardcore gamers love mobile games. You know, when a new game like Diablo or Alien is announced, people go nuts because they're so happy.
Are you trying sarcasm right now? Is this what that was?
That was actually my first languages that I spoke before. And then he talked about continuing non-gaming development, like, you know, working with theme parks, like with Universal and movies. But he also dropped this nugget. And thank you to Nintendo Everything for translating this. He said, "We aren't really fixated on our consoles. At the moment, we're offering the uniquely developed Nintendo Switch and its software. And that's what we're basing how we deliver the Nintendo experience on. That being said, technology changes. We'll continue to think flexibly about how to deliver that experience as time goes on. It has been over 30 years since we started developing consoles. Nintendo's history goes back even farther than that, and through all the struggles that they faced, Wii U, the only thing that they thought about, Virtual Boy, was what to make next." He didn't really say those names. "In the long term, perhaps our focus as a business could shift away from home consoles. Flexibility is just as important as ingenuity." So that's scary, right? If the president of the company that makes these consoles that we love so much says, well, maybe in the future we'll shift away from consoles. That's a scary statement to drop in an investor interview like that.
I don't think it's...
Is it?
I don't think it's that scary.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you're being sensationalist.
Okay.
Like, I don't think it's...
This just is.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily scary because, like, I don't really care about the console itself. Like, it's nice to hold a Super Nintendo controller and feel nostalgic, but I'd be just as happy to play a Mario game.
A Vita instead of the Switch, right?
Well, no, I'm saying like to me, it's Nintendo games. It's about the games. It's about the software. Yeah. It's about the experience playing, you know, Zelda, Mario, etc. Not necessarily the fact that I'm playing it on my Switch or on my GameCube. Like, I don't, in the same way that Sega went software only after the Dreamcast failed, we still get Sega games, though. Now, regardless of whether or not Sega games are like amazing, is a whole different conversation. Yeah. But if Nintendo continued to make the same caliber of software for another system, like, I'd have no qualms with that.
I also think it's a lot less scary when you look at the roots of Nintendo as a company as well. I mean, it came out, they originated from 1889 as a playing card company. And they just, it seems like they were just flexible and evolved with the times and made what was popular as time went on. And I think that's what that comment is that in the future, how many years that might be, maybe if home consoles aren't as popular anymore, they might shift focus to something else. And I think that's a totally reasonable thing to say. And I don't think it has anything to do with what will happen in the next year or two or 5 years.
Yeah. It's also indicative of the fact that we are losing a grip of what we could even call a home console anymore, right? And how much of a moving target that is. We've had this generation alone two effectively iPhone or mobile style stopgap consoles that came out between 2013 when the PS4 launched and then the PS4 Pro.
That's the Pro and the One X. Yeah.
Or the fact that
halfway machines, the S2.
Yeah. And that I don't think they specifically internally call the Nintendo Switch a console. It's this console hybrid handheld. I don't think it means we're only going to get mobile games. I think it just means that kind of what you alluded to, Zach, as long as Nintendo, without them necessarily going third party or anything, can figure out a way to get video games into our hands, however that method or vehicle is, I'm okay with that as well. I don't necessarily need a tangible box underneath my television that says Nintendo on it, as long as I'm still playing Nintendo games.
Okay, so I was being sensationalist on purpose. I mean, look, the industry, the console and the hardware industry is moving towards something that is going to be very different from the console that we have today, right?
That's, yeah.
The PlayStation 4 has powerful chipsets inside, costs a lot of money to make, you know, stores content locally, and a company has to invest a lot of R&D to make all that happen. And then the controllers and the way you interface and the online networks. The world has gotten very complicated. And in the background, internet speeds have gotten faster and faster and faster every generation. And we are going to get to a point where our internet and our connectivity is so good that you no longer need the chipset on your living room. It just needs to be in a giant mm-hmm. company warehouse somewhere, you know, operating all these games that are being streamed to you when they finally fast.
Japan is already playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is one of the best looking games I've ever seen on the Nintendo Switch. Like that's already happening. That future is already here.
And Resident Evil 7, yeah.
And also Resident Evil 7, which is another game.
It isn't. You couldn't be playing this reliably everywhere you go, which is the selling point of the Switch.
Not yet.
You know, another thing to think of is that consoles are traditionally sold at a loss. Like the PS3 was sold, they did not make profits on PlayStation 3s. And the Nintendo Switch is interesting in that they were not taking a loss on the initial sales.
Nintendo historically doesn't take a loss on hardware.
But
and
other
some people are
except for Virtual Boy.
Yeah. Well, there's that. But let's also not count the number. Like, let's not count out the idea that there's been a number of times where the industry itself has said, "Oh, this is it for Nintendo." When the Virtual Boy tanked, when GameCube tanked, when the Wii U tanked, yeah. Everybody's like, this is probably Nintendo's last home console, and what have they done every single time? They've turned around and delivered a home run.
So we've done Let's Plays of stuff like BS Zelda, which is them on the Famicom effectively saying, you know, we're going to beam this sort of eventized Zelda game to you.
Have they been predicting this future since 1991?
Yeah. Then there's also the Nintendo 64 controller packed with games that they launched in China, like years after the N64 came out. The IQ, I think it was called. And it was a plug and play controller with games loaded on it, like Mario 64. And like, is that a console? Like, there's nuance.
Yeah,
here,
and
right?
there's markets.
I love markets.
There's markets right now that are playing Nintendo first party games on tablets.
Yeah.
So here's why, though. You know, again, this comment can mean a lot of things, right? It can literally mean, hey, making hardware is just too expensive. In the future, we would love to be a software company. And like, I personally don't have a problem with playing a Nintendo game on a powerful Xbox and having Nintendo not worry about, you know, the chipsets and all the R&D for the hardware. Stick that into game design and we'll get more Mario games, right? What I'm worried about, though, is if it means streaming box, by the way, it's fine. What I'm worried about is that we'll be missing out on some of the hardware-related innovations that Nintendo has put out, right? And just last year, they made a ton of money with a classic console like the Super NES Classic re-release. They could be doing that kind of stuff. They could be going the toy route. But I want them to keep on pushing control mechanisms, you know, the concept of, you may hate the Wii now, but it did something special and brought people into games that other companies hadn't thought of.
But I think they can
iToy doesn't count.
They can do all of that without a set-top box.
Exactly.
You know?
And
not only that, but imagine the Orwellian horror of a 4K photorealistic Mario.
We're getting there.
On PlayStation 4 where it's just like a real live slimy small man running around.
They gave him one gray hair in Odyssey. Like, they're experimenting with that. How I don't know how deep they can get with the gene textures in Smash Brothers, but they're getting closer.
Those genes look real.
They look really good. I think there's wiggle room there. I think that I'm glad that at least one company is constantly saying what are video games? It's like a very heady pothead conversation, but they're like, what is a video game system? How do we deliver video games? I already know what the next PlayStation and the next Xboxes are going to be, right? They're going to be boxes.
PlayStations and Xboxes.
Yeah. And I have no idea what comes next after Switch. I know 20 years from now, they're going to resell all of us a Switch. that's like just plug and play. It has a whole bunch of stuff on it already, yeah. You know, in the same way.
Look, the Switch Classic. It's the exact same thing, except it's like this big.
It's this small. It's the Switch Classic. Tiny trick.
I am excited if the future of Nintendo is to make games on hardware and, you know, use their savvy to create unique control mechanisms and all of that, right? Like, the future console is going to be a streaming channel on your television anyway, but, you know, looking at their earnings report, like the last one I saw in September, they made 18.7 billion yen on smartphone mm-hmm. games, right? Just through microtransactions and buying like Mario whole.
Regalia
and
lost.
that compared to 39 billion in digital downloads of their packaged goods software. So their digital market on the Switch and the 3DS was 39 billion. And like, They didn't release a ton of smartphone games. They released a ton of other games.
That's
like,
yen, right?
Yen, yes. Okay. Yeah, you gotta take off, did I say dollars? You gotta take off two zeros, right? Yeah. So 39 billion yen, you take off two zeros of that, you get your dollars. Yeah, 390
yeah,
million.
Yeah, 3.9 billion. Yeah.
And so, one more. 390.
Yeah.
That means the smartphone revenue is gonna surpass at least digital downloads. If they put out Mario Kart Tour and some of the other mobile games that they have in the works.
Oh, right.
I just don't want the mobile market to become so attractive where they go, all right, we'll just go mobile only.
No, I
want to. I want them to make Joy-Con, as you guys
know. Well, I wanted to.
By the way, here the special edition.
Those look dope.
Smash Brothers.
I'm okay with their mobile market making a ton of money. I just want it to exist in parallel with the games that they're making here on systems, because every version that we've gotten of a mobile game so far has been a sort of pared down version of the stuff we can see on consoles. Mm-hmm. Animal Crossing, Mario Run, I loved both those games on mobile. Those are not like, you know, a sort of full-fledged Mario game or a full-fledged Animal Crossing mm-hmm. game. Mario Run came close, but still it's missing a lot of the sort of the core elements of what I come to expect from those games.
And that's ultimately though what's at risk here, right? Like, if you love something that is so fantastic but it doesn't make as much money as the thing that you like slightly less, that's the risk.
I know.
Right? And like, there aren't as many Metroid games as there are Mario games because they just never made as much money, and there hasn't been an F-Zero game in a long time because GX didn't sell that well, you know.
It sucks. It was so good.
I'm so sorry.
But someday we'll get that back, and Excitebike and all of that stuff. We should just quickly. What do you think in like 5 years, right? Like, the Switch just came out. The typical console cycle, not counting Wii U, is usually around 5 years to 7 years. Extreme length, sometimes Xbox 360 to Xbox One was 8 years, which probably cost them the lead. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Where do you think Nintendo is going to be in 2022? So in 5 years, the Switch has now run its course. Do you think they'll have another box? Do you think they'll make another console? Do you think they'll be a software company only like Sega? Do you think they'll be a streaming box or a service company? Do you think they're a mobile company? Do you think they're a toy maker?
I think in 3 years not in 3 years. I bet you sometime next year they iterate on the Switch and release some sort of like streamlined version of the Switch, Switch 2.0. Yeah. We've heard rumors of sort of like an entry level Switch where the Joy-Con don't detach and you can, it's strictly a portable console.
My first Switch.
Exactly, something along those lines. So I think that's step one, in the same way that there's a PlayStation 4 Pro and an Xbox One X. And then I think in 5 years you're looking at it, like, I think that these comments, if they are talking about getting out of the console market, we're decades away from that. You know what I mean? Like, I think that is pie in the sky, you know, 10 years away at least before they decide to fully go like only streaming or only software. I think we're going to see some sort of new console from them. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if they take this Switch blueprint and iterate on that and make a full blown like Switch 2.0. That's, you know, some sort of further innovation from this.
Yeah, the weird risk on that is that their handheld and console divisions have always sort of like worked like next to each other. And so when one of them wasn't doing well, the other one could sort of support everything, right? And they had that weird third pillar thing happening during the GameCube era.
Well, the handheld market is now shifting to mobile.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's where those developers went as well. Although we've seen, I think, a lot come back towards the Switch. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this was a very calculated risk. And it's why I think they planned for years of support on 3DS, because in case this struck out, they would still have something that was lucrative. Merging both of those things forever, I'm for it. as a fan of Nintendo stuff because it means I get to get all my Nintendo games in one place. But if they put out that next thing and it hinges on some weird gimmick and it goes Wii U and it tanks, that's a huge, huge problem.
I think that's what I'm saying, though, is like they're still running on a two-pillar operation, right? Like the 3DS probably goes away, but those that mobile market becomes the 3DS successor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they play it safe and iterate on the Switch in the same way that they've iterated on the DS line for 10 years.
Yeah. Like the new 3DS with the new Switch with better processing power that can keep up with the newer consoles.
Yeah.
It will probably be seen as a very positive trade for Nintendo shareholders, right? To switch the 3DS market, which still involves you marketing hardware, manufacturing hardware, you have all that cost for the console, to the mobile market, if the mobile market can outpace it, and it will, right? Your margins are so much bigger, and mm-hmm. shareholders care not just about top-line revenue, but about the margins of the company as well. And, I feel like they will have this two-pillar strategy with their hardware for a while, definitely for the next 10 years, and then they'll have mobile, and then they'll do all the stuff now, the kind of gamer lifestyle stuff with movies and amusement parks.
Yeah, that's
probably
right.
A pretty good future for that company.
Toys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Toys.
I mean, there's so much merch with all those Nintendo games.
Yeah. For sure. So don't be too scared yet. Let's see what happens. Let's move on to this little thing we call question block.
It's a game.
It's not a game.
You can play at home.
Where we take questions from our fans. Either you can email us at nvc@ign.com or we grab some questions from our Facebook group, the Nintendo Podcast Forums. It's an invite-only forum, so if you want to join it, just head on over to Facebook.
Quick note on that. If you're serious about joining, answer the questions.
Yep.
All right? I get a lot of people in there with requests. They don't answer the questions.
I cherish
that's what they're there for.
Yeah, that's right. So thank you very much to everybody who asked the question. There were actually a couple of hundred, and we had to only pick a few. We'll see how much time we have. But the first one was sent to us at nvc@ign.com. Comes from Sindre. He says, hello from Norway. I'm a longtime listener and love the weekly banter. It really puts some flair to my otherwise boring chores and commute to work. I have what I feel is a crazy but awesome theory for Nintendo's eventual release of Skyward Sword Remaster. In order to fully capitalize on the motion controls that drove the game, along with the remaster, Nintendo will release a full Labo set with a sword and shield that work with the Joy-Con motion controls so that you are actually holding the items just like Link and respond to the slashing of the sword. It would probably come with lots of design problems and flaws, but if any company is crazy enough to try it, it would definitely be Nintendo. What do you think?
I love his ambition and idealism. I want to see him playing this on a train. Because this is ultimately a handheld, so bring it on. Yeah, bring your cardboard on the train and play Skyward Sword.
Yeah, not a chance, right? I mean, This seems so crazy. I love this email. I read it and did a good guffaw over it because, like, it seems like such a ridiculous. I don't really know like how much longer Nintendo will support Labo.
So there will be more Labo this year.
Yeah,
for sure.
You will totally see
more Labo kits this year. Maybe
you definitely would.
I would play it.
Yeah.
Maybe not on a train, but like maybe in the office or people to laugh at me.
I love the idea of like people being like, all right, Skyward Sword is really ambitious, but like it had some major, control barriers and people felt very frustrated. What should we do? And someone's like, triple down on it. Yeah.
Do more.
Just because I said I'd play it, that doesn't mean I wouldn't absolutely hate it as much as I did.
Just see Casey out there in the middle of Golden Gate Park with a cardboard sword and shield. Like, strapped to her face.
No one would bother me.
I want this as an option.
Yeah, because people would be terrified.
Yeah.
All right. All right, Sindra. We're putting in a good word for this.
The good news is that you can play Skyward Sword at home right now with cardboard on you, and no one will know.
Yeah.
Just
right,
you.
Next question. Maybe you'll take this one, Zach. This is from Justin Pua from the Nintendo Voice Chat Facebook forums.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got?
If you had any access to Super Mario Power Up, which would it be, and what would you use it for? Obviously, the cape from Super Mario World. And I would use it for flying to work because I hate taking the bus.
Cape, 100%. Yeah. Or give me that little squirrel nut. I'll take that too. It's pretty good. That little flying squirrel nut. You don't like that little flying squirrel nut?
This is just a weird sentence.
It's just a weird thing to say on a podcast.
I would pick the frog power up so I could trick the frogs into thinking I was one of them.
Okay.
hop in one of those ponds that Casey was talking about.
Is this like a childhood like dream?
I've always wanted to be a giant frog. No, I'm just being stupid. It doesn't matter. It's fake. Right. It's not real.
It might happen now.
Who knows?
Casey, what do you want?
I'm going to be kind of lame and say I would want the clock item that gives you additional time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's good.
For life?
But I'm assuming, but there has to be a caveat. So there's always the problem with time control powers. If you freeze time to get extra time to do whatever you want, are you aging during that time? Because if so, I don't want that power.
In Mario's canon, you're still aging. So
when are you going to take the clock? Because like if you get it at like 99 and you're just like old and peeing yourself and you have 10 more years of that, that's not a good look.
No, I mean, like, so if you have it and you don't age, if you could just freeze time and you're not aging during that time, the world around you just freezes, you have unlimited extra time to do whatever you want with. That's amazing.
I'm not here to talk about like the physics of time and space, but if you're still doing normal person stuff and everything else is frozen, I assume you're probably still aging.
Yeah, well, it's a magical clock, Zach, so maybe it gives you that extra perk.
Anyway, long story short, cape.
Very nice. The bee is really good too.
Yeah. So I could be a giant bee.
Our next question,
Trick
Casey.
The bees.
Casey, maybe you want to take this one from Ronnie Anthony from the Nintendo Voice Chat Facebook forums.
Why hasn't Square brought the Kingdom Hearts collection to Switch yet? Do they not like money? Probably not.
So I called Square and they said they do like money.
They love it. That's why they're putting 40 Final Fantasy games on the system.
What do you think about Kingdom Hearts coming to Switch? Do you think it will happen?
Absolutely.
100%.
Yeah. It would make
absolutely.
So much sense.
I can't
sense.
Believe that it hasn't, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many Kingdom Hearts games that came out on the DS. I don't know, maybe they have some other...
So we've asked them a couple of times, and our news editors, Andrew Goldfarb, Jonathan asked Square every time they see him. Jonathan is a huge Kingdom Hearts fan.
Jonathan has a tattoo on his forehead that just says Switch when, like anytime he talks to anybody.
And so they always say, he says, when are you going to bring Kingdom Hearts 3 to Switch? By the way, it runs on the Unreal Engine, so port's probably not that hard. And they always say, we have no plans right now. Let us focus on this game. Like, I think the answer is they've been trying to make 3 for so long. Yeah. They just want to get their SKUs out and then they want to worry about the other versions. But there's also something to be said about size, right? We got the story so far came out last year. That's 9 games in one. Kingdom Hearts 1.5 Plus and 2.5 HD Remix.
Yeah, why haven't those come out on the Switch?
It's 45 gigs. So those are big collections. Those are big games.
What was Doom? Doom was like 30, right?
And that was already huge. And you had to download the multiplayer mode on top of that. So you only got half the game. You can't do that with Kingdom Hearts. By comparison, our wonderful Mario Odyssey is 5.7 gigs by comparison. So this is literally
also much better.
These are literally games that are 10 times as large.
That is not okay.
maybe they're waiting for cartridges to get cheaper.
Yeah,
maybe some massive games.
Yeah.
Brian, you want to take the next one?
Sure. Which one are we going with?
From Miles Baker from the podcast forums.
Miles Baker asks, what industry trends are you seeing as a result of the success of the Switch? With the success of the Wii, we saw the industry focus on casual gamers and motion controls. Are we seeing similar trends this generation? I don't know.
I don't really know about trends.
I think this one.
Yeah. I saw.
What are you
thinking? Software trend. I think console players are playing indies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And 100%. We haven't seen, Microsoft has tried, obviously, with Xbox Live Arcade back in the days. Sony's got promoted some indies like Journey to great success. But no other platform are these games just performing so well outside of Steam. The indie games, like we saw, we saw some indie devs tweet it.
Huh? You gotta quit doing that. You keep setting your Switch down right in the path of the light and it just beams me right in the
eye. That's what's happening. I'm wondering why you would be shifting my Switch around. Yeah. How's it work?
You're good. No, stop it.
I think console gamers are finally paying attention to some of the smaller games because they're perfect to play on the go on a system that has decent joysticks and buttons.
They're also rebuying old stuff like crazy, I think is a giant argument against backwards compatibility in future consoles.
Yep.
I said this on Beyond this week, but the most successful systems this generation, or at least currently, I think are the Switch and the PS4, and neither of them have backwards compatibility. And the Xbox One, like, really honed in on that, and I don't think it significantly helped them in the market. Plus, you look at the MPD, and people are buying GTA 5, they're buying Mario Kart 8, they'll buy New Super Mario Bros. U.
They're sort of normalizing the idea of, like, this, like, consistent re-release from a previous generation in a way that it's like, okay, we don't have a backwards compatibility option, we don't have a virtual console, but if you want to play Burnout Paradise on your PS4... Guess what? We
there
got
it is.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the other trend is that they've succeeded in making me buy way more controller colors.
That's your own deal.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened to you guys. That's so weird.
I have a couple.
House of a Thousand Joy-Cons.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this was a I had a wonderful time talking with you about things that were in Fire Emblem this week. We'll come back to Fire Emblem.
Yeah. Yeah. Later this year.
And honestly, like I feel like you will love those games if you just give them a chance.
I have to give it a shot now. I'm painting myself into a corner.
So good.
Yeah.
We're gonna do some Let's Plays with Mr. Zach here and get them to play them. But I want to thank you, the listeners and the viewers, for tuning into NVC again. Even though Zach didn't host, and he's by far the best host of the show. The show ever had. He's a wonderful man.
Go on.
If you like the show, please, you know, watch us on YouTube every Friday at 3, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And on IGN before that, early, one day early at 3 p.m. on Thursdays. If you don't like any of that video stuff, you can, of course, also subscribe to our show on iTunes or your podcast service of choice, including that janky iOS podcast app that we love so much.
I use that. It's fine.
Yeah, it's not great. But anyway, you can listen to us in the car, and hopefully you enjoyed our little Nintendo discussion. We'll come back for more next week. Where can people find you when you're not on NVC?
You can find me on Twitter at ShinyKCD.
I'm on Twitter at AgentBizzle.
I'm currently taking a break from social media, but typically I'm on Twitter at ZacharySD.
Wow, there's a story there. We're going to dive into that after the camera shuts off. And I'm PearIGN everywhere. Thank you so much. We're out. See you next week.
Get the thing.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.